Okay, Rabotai, Shavua Tov, Boker Tov. And today's daf in Masechet Ketuvot, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Kuftet. And I made a little mistake yesterday, and I did half a Kuftet without realizing. That's one of the problems when you're using an iPad. You don't flip the page. So, sorry about that. So I guess we can start over again at the beginning of Kuftet and do the whole daf, especially as since it was Mitzvah Shabbos, there's some people who couldn't show up, although everybody here was there. But I'm sure you won't mind reviewing that. Okay, so let's start therefore on the Halakha Mishnah on daf Kuftet Amud Beit. Haposek Ma'ot L'Chatanos. So we're continuing over here the Piskei Halachot of the seven of Admon, and we are now going to move on. This is the last of the issues over here that we found that had to do directly with the Inyanim of Ksuvos. We interrupted with the discussion of other issues, such as Manu Mitzas. This has to do also with the sugi that we had before. Remember that we spoke about Hinein Dvarim HaNikbim Ba'amira, and that L'chora you are able to make the type of arrangement, which we call it Tnaim, as long as it goes directly to Kedushin, Omdu Miniskachu, Hinein Advarim HaNikbim Ba'amira, we said. Over here, a guy had agreed to support his son-in-law, who had already made the Kedushin, for 10 years in Kolo, and then Pashat L'Tarego. So basically, he goes bankrupt. Now, there's questions over here, what we're talking about, and exactly whether it means literally Pashat L'Tarego in the technical terms, that he went bankrupt, or Pashat L'Tarego, he sticks his foot at him and said, go try to get it at me. You know, hang me upside down and shake it out of my pocket. So this is a shakedown. You ain't getting nothing from me. Or another pshat is, you know, well, I got lots of very expensive dirt on the bottom of my feet, so you're welcome to that. You know, you can clean it off and sell it if you like. That's about all you're getting out of me. But anyway, this is the way Rashi learns the popular usage of the term, as we've already shown. Pashat L'Tarego has deep, deep Kabbalistic roots in the Gemara about Kerach and the whole idea of Yaakov Avinu, and what it was that Esav was going to do to him by damaging his ability to be Amid al Raglav. So it's, again, it's the one of these multi-leveled concepts that that we find, and that Gavi is going to write down Pashat L'Zarego and include these various approaches. Anyway, so he's not going to pay. So now the question is, what can Chosin do? Well, he says to Daddy, okay, that's fine, Mr. Daddy, because I can always go and find myself another wife. But your daughter is going to turn white-haired before I do anything for her, let me tell you. So she ain't getting married to nobody. Now, of course, the problem over here is, what about the fact that these are Dvarim HaNiknim Mi'amira, right? That was Rav Gittel. That was the famous Rav Gittel. If you're Omdu V'Kitcho, so I understand. What do you mean? He can only threaten Daddy? He can't go after Daddy in court? This is supposedly something that is enforceable. That was the whole thing that we said before. So how do you explain the Mishnah? So first of all, the point is, as we mentioned over there, that when it says Omdu V'Kitchu, maybe the meaning is literally that they had to be Mekadesh immediately, Mitoch the Tanai that they had just made. Or, now this is a very important point that Tosus adds, that by making a reading of the Tnaim, now note that this has become a minhag, right? If you make a reading of the Tnaim at the time of the Kiddushin, so then it's the equivalent of Omdu V'Kitchu. And then they really are Dvarim HaNiknim Ba'amira. So that would be an additional reason. Yeah, obviously over there we say that, you know, Konumi Yada and the Adim came and they do a Kinyan Suter and so on. But okay, I mean, the Minhagim that have been Mishtarshim from all of these various halachas end up being not very Nogea, since the Tanaim essentially says there were no Tanaim. that was Rav Meisher's way of dealing with this, and everybody is sort of taking it on. So that Hoyo V'Kvar Niskaimu Kol HaTanaim and Enlem the Tainas on one another and so on. So that was in order to avoid all of the horrific problems that used to come out of this Rav Gittel Halacha, because, I mean, you know, people would claim, well, you mentioned, and no, but you said, and it was awful, and they would, if there was be a bittel of the wedding, so then they would sue each other for the Tanayim. Anyway, So, but the question is, over here, what are we talking about? So we could be talking about where he cannot be Tovea because of the fact that they didn't mention the Tanaim at the time of the Kiddushin. There weren't made immediately, in which case he doesn't have any option. This is all that he can do. And it wasn't the case of Omdu V'Kitchu. And now that would be one possibility. Another possibility could be that he doesn't want to. In other words, he says, look, I don't. Either it could be talking about where the Pashat Lo'as HaRegel is literally Pashat Lo'as HaRegel. The father doesn't have anything left to sue, you know, and he won't be able to collect in court because there's nothing to collect from. And what it is that he's doing is he's putting on tremendous pressure on the family so that somebody should come and rescue them. You know, oh my God, what's going to be with our niece? You know, we better make a magbit and we'll raise money for and so on. But it could be that he doesn't have an option. Or it's possible that he says, look, I'm not interested in going to court. You decide what you want to do. I'm sitting back here. I'm perfectly happy with your daughter turning white, you know. Okay, but whatever the case is, clearly it does have to be addressed. The issue of the famous Rav Gittel Amar Rav about the nature of Tanoim and Dvarim HaNiknim Ba'Amira. So Admon says, well, why does that make sense? I mean, you cannot use me as a pawn. That's the point. Because the I didn't do anything. How is it correct to use an individual who's completely not at fault as a pawn in a fight between two other people? So if I had said it myself, that's one thing. I mean, but I never said anything. So ilu ani pasakti latzmi yeshevat shetabin rosh. You could blame me. But now? I mean, it's my father who was supposed to say, man yichol ala sod. I mean, what am I supposed to do? I can't bring any additional pressure on him. He doesn't even talk to me. Okinos opitor. So either you take me as your wife or you give me a get, but you can't leave me in limbo. Omar Rabbi Gamliel, ro'eh ani et divrei Admon. Here too, Rabbi Gamliel says, I believe that Admon is correct. So now that means that in these first three Piskei Halachos of Admon, Rabbi Gamliel has agreed with him. Now we're going to see that that's the last time that Rabbi Gamliel agrees with Admon and what the implications of that are. Anyway, it says the Gemara Maslisa Dolkei Haitana. There is another version of this machlokas, which is definitely anti our Mishnah, because our Mishnah has Admon saying that in the event that I would have done this, I accept the responsibility. But over here, it was Daddy who did it, right? However, in the Brite, it goes like this. Titania. Omar Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yudah lo necho ko Admon v'chachomim ala posek mot l'chatano pashat lo et haregel sheyicholai shetomar abba pasak alai mani yicholah lasot. But on the contrary, there never was a machlokas between Admon and the Tanakama. That's in a case where it was only between Daddy and the Chosen. Of course she can say, what am I supposed to do? The machlokas gufa was in the case where she was paseket alatzma. Over there, if she was paseket alatzma, the chachomim omrim teshevet shetobin rosha, and in that very case, which is the opposite of our Mishnah, where supposedly Admon would have agreed, ilu ani pasakti latzmi, that was the whole point she was saying, in the version in the Braita, it's talking about where she was paseket herself. And, you know, they were all sitting together, and she says this in front of her father, you know, well, Daddy always told me anybody that I marry, he's going to support Nkayla for 10 years. He's a good man. You know, you can trust him. You know, bull. So, but she could still say, according to Admon, that she, I thought, you know, but I mean, Kisvurani Shabanotinalai. I mean, look, he always made me think that. But if he doesn't do it, I have no way of imposing it on him. So according to this version, the very thing that supposedly Admon's Taina was in our Mishnah, well, if she had said it herself, it'd be one thing, is exactly what we're talking about, where she did say it herself. And nonetheless, since there's no way that it could have been understood to mean, I'll take care of it. You can't take care of it. It's basically going to be a function of your father's willingness to do it or unwillingness. So over there, she could still say that it's inappropriate to use me as a pawn in your fight. It's between you and Daddy. I mean, I fought. So in this case also, in the Braita, we find that Rebbe Gamliel agrees with Admon. Om Rebbe Gamliel, ro'e ani et divrei Admon. Tana, now there are further issues that need to be addressed, because there's a Braita that says about this discussion, which Rashi understands to mean this discussion, according to the Braita that we just had, is only talking about Bigdola. So if the girl was mature at the time that they made the Kiddush, then yes, Avo Biktana Kofi. But if she was a child, so then for sure we're going to force. Force who? Force the father? I mean, it should be just the opposite. If she was a Kitana, so then it means that she had no right to say anything. She doesn't know what she's talking about. I mean, she could, in her mind, she could believe anything, right? So it should be just the opposite, no? It means, I mean, to believe what a child says, I mean, that's your problem, you know? So in that case, of course, she cannot be used as a part. Wherever we find those words, the halacha is like Rabbi Gamliel, because Rabbi Gamliel supports Admon, there we paskin like Admon too. Omele Rav or Reb Nachman, you say every place. I mean, would that mean even if it's a discussion in a Braita? Because remember, very often we find the Mishnah Tenu, in other words, wherever we find such and such a Shita in the Mishnah, is this a reference to the Braita as well? Now, in this particular case, we have a bit of a problem, because the implication of bringing this immediately after quoting the Braita that says the opposite of the Mishnah is that he is asking whether we would paskin like Rebbe Gamliel in this Braita, which is a bit of a problem, isn't it? Because, I mean, if you're going to be paskining like Rebbe Gamliel in the Braita, then you're paskining against Rebbe Gamliel in the Mishnah, right? I mean, you can't paskin like both of them, and then that would mean that you're actually saying that the Braita would be more reliable than the Mishnah in terms of the way in which the Machlokas is reported. Why would we do that? We always considered the Mishnah to be the more authoritative version, right? So it would be a little bit weird. I mean, you can't paskin like both, as Tosis points out. Well, what is that supposed to mean? I mean, the Braita and the Mishnah are antithetical, right? Because, I mean, there's such rimsets. The Mishnah says that if I had said the Tanai, then I could be used as a pawn. And the Braita is saying just the opposite, that if she did make the Tanai, and nonetheless, she can technically swurani. So, I mean, Tosa says, look, I mean, it must be, the question over here is, would we mean that according to the way that the Braita reports the Machlokas, and Rabbi Gamliel supports Adma, is that if that's true, would the klal that we go according to Rabbi Gamliel's support still be true? Even though it's a Braita, it's not necessarily saying that that would mean that we would support the Braita over the Mishnah. That would be still an issue that would need to be determined. But the question of whether Admon would be correct according to the Shita in the Braita because of Rabbi Gamliel's support is what he's asking. So therefore, I'm asking, says Rav at Rav Nachman, I'm asking, is this true afilu b'Braita? And Reb Nachman said, well, I mean, what did they say? Think about what it says. Does it say, Koma, Kom, Sha'omer, Reb Gamliel, Roya, Neti, Evri, Admon, B'mishnatenu? No, it says Koma, Kom. Shomi, Kamrina, B'mishna, B'choma, Kom, Sha'omer, Reb Gamliel, Kamrina. Omer, Reb Zera, Omer, Rabba, Bar Yirmiya. Let me just get to the bottom of this, okay? Because what we have over here so far are the two Piskei Halachas of Chanan, which was the whole beginning of the introduction in the parak, is that we're going to be talking about the two famous Piskei Halachas of Chanan where the Bnei Kohanim Gedolim argued on him. And then we're going to have seven Piskei Halachas of Admon where also we find that Tanna Kamma disagrees. So I just want to make it very clear that the two things that we said by Chanan, we actually paskin like him. And that is, now this is how Rashi understands it, Halacha kayotsebo. And Rashi understands kayotsebo means that those who support him, and that's what we're looking at over here, both Chanan and Admon come across in these first five Mishnayos that we're talking about over here, ignoring the very first Mishnah, but the first five cases come across as being involved in a machlokas with the Chachomim where they are supported by some very powerful support. Hanan was supported by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. That is serious stuff. And Admon was supported, at least in three of them, the first three, was supported by Rebbe Gamliel. Also, very significant support, which, of course, turns him into a Rabbim as well. It's no longer a question of Admon as an individual. So what Rabbi Zera is saying is that as far as the two things that Hanan said, then the halacha is like he and those who support him. That is to say, like Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. However, when it comes to the seven things that we're going to be saying, we haven't done all of them yet. We've only done the first three. But the Shiva Dvorim, Shomar Admon, then the halacha is not like the Kayotze Bo. It's what he seems to be saying, that the halacha is not like Rabbi Gamliel. So what? What exactly is he saying? Ilema Hachikamer. Is he saying that the Shnei Dvorim Shomar Halacha, Halacha Kamoto V'Kayotze Bo, so the two things that Hanan said, the halacha is like Hanan and like Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who supports him. But the seven things that Admon says, none of them are like him, even in those things that Rabbi Gamliel agreed with. And ein halacha kamoto v'lo kayotze bo. Is that the pshat? But we know that that's not the pshat, because Rabbi Yitzchak ben Elazar quoted Chizkiyah saying that wherever it says Rabbi Gamliel ro'eh aneyet divrei Admon, that's what we just learned, and nobody argued on that. And we said that wherever Rabbi Gamliel supports Admon, that there the halacha is kamoto. So how can we say that we're throwing out all seven piskei halachas, right? I mean, it doesn't really make sense that Rabbi Zera would be ignoring Chizkiyah's overall Kabbalah, which was greater. Then, I mean, that was normally assumed to be the halacha, and it's not the same as in a Braita, but still. Difficult to believe that what Rabbi Zera was saying was going against Chizkiyah. So maybe what Rabbi Zera is saying is like this. The Shnei Dvarim Shomar Hanan Halacha Kabotu Chayotze Bo, like Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who supports it. And the Shiva Dvarim Shomar Admon, over there, in a halacha, that what Rabbi Gamliel seems to be saying is that only the first three I'm masking to, right? It says Rabbi Gamliel was Omar Kamot. All of the other four, Rabbi Gamliel apparently rejected. And nonetheless, what I'm saying is, I support Admon and I disagree with Kayotze Bo, meaning I disagree with Rabbi Gamliel, who only supports Admon in three things and implies that in the other four, he's wrong. I say he's right across the board. Maybe that's the pshat. And Hakamoto Halacha Bekulo, I don't agree with Rabbi Gamliel. I agree with him. That is not true, because Rabbi Yitzchak ben Elazar also said that that was part of what Chizkiyah said, is that Koma Kom Sha'amar Rabbi Gamliel, Ro'ani Adivrei Admon Halacha Kamoto. And that means that only where Rabbi Gamliel supported him, that's, and only that, is where we agree with Admon Halacha. But lo amar, if Rabbi Gamliel did not say that he holds like Admon, then we don't paskin like Admon. So then it's unlikely that Rabbi Zera meant to paskin like Admon across the board. Ela, so what he must have been saying like this. Shnei dvarim sha'amar Hanan. Over there, the halacha is kamo tova chayotze bo. As far as the shiva dvarim sha'amar Admon, Yeshvem shalacha kamoto v'chayotzebo, v'yeshvem she'inalacha kamoto ela kayotzebo. In other words, wherever Rabbi Gamliel said, v'chomakom shomer Rabbi Gamliel, ro'eh ani et divrei Admon alacha kamoto, whereas the other four cases, in alacha kamoto, and that is good for the introduction to the next Mishnah, which is the fourth of Admon's cases, and the beginning of the series of cases that Rabbi Gamliel does not approve of, and that is the mashma'ut, that indeed the halacha would not be like him in those cases. So up until now, we've been talking about all of the cases where we do paskin like Admon. Even Akiva's not giving me a hand over here against Barnea, where the Zoom has pitted them one against the other. Gavi's withdrawn from the front. I need help there, Akiva. Thank you. However, just in case I got myself a Barnea Cup, just in case nobody would support me. Okay. Anyway, this brings us to a very important moment, and that is the 167th additional year over here for Richie, if he can take care of this next Mishnah.
Hey, a lot of weight on my shoulders.
It sure is.
Azuk the Halakha Mishnah.
Lovely. We have to, Barnea, please remember to add that to the recording. So we've got over here, once again, cases that are of universal interest and are not limited to the idea of ketuvot. However, remember that many of the halachas of collection are really significantly related to the underlying concept of ketuvot because of the ease with which we want to make collection possible in the inyan of chein. And the reason that we put a lot of these halachas in ketuvot is because we are learning out general business ideas and general collection ideas out of ketuvot. So here we're talking about an interesting case. Someone is ma'orer al hasadeh. You'll remember that ma'orer al hasadeh means that a person claims that a field that was sold to another one, to another party, actually belonged to him, and that the person who sold it had no rights to sell it, and he's taking it. So he proves that he had a chazaka on this field. The other person cannot prove that he purchased the field, and that would allow this person to remove it from the buyer by saying, look, you know, you got a problem that this guy sold you to Brooklyn Bridge. I mean, you're welcome to go back to him. I'm happy to be a witness for you and whatever, but this is my field, and I'm taking it. So he's an orer al hasadeh. So, okay, fine. Normally, there's no problem. But what happened over here is that this guy comes, and he brings a contract. And in that contract, it is shown that the person who claimed that he's the real owner is signed on as a witness to the sale of the field to this guy. So the guy says, come on, man. I mean, you signed on it, and now you're claiming that the whole thing was illegal? He had no right to sell it. It belonged to you, but you're signed on the sale. I mean, that's ridiculous. You're obviously admitting that it's his if you're signed on the deed. Says Admon, that doesn't matter. Because the guy can always say, well, of course I signed on it. You know what? You're a nice fellow. The guy that sold it to you is a mafioso. I can't deal with him. So boy, was I happy when he was ready to sell the field to you. Because I figure, okay, I'll sign on the contract. You move into the field. I come take the field away from you. And now you go deal with the mafioso. I won't have anything to do with him. So I'm really sorry using you in this fashion. But, you know, I mean, you got more bodyguards than I got. So thank you very much. So therefore, he could say, Hasheni noachli harishon kasha himenu. This is another important concept, which Gavi is undoubtedly writing down, despite the fact of hiding behind his trademark. So I can always say, the first guy I couldn't take to court. The second guy is easier for me to handle. Whereas the Chachamim say, no, if you signed on it, so then you don't have any right to come back and claim that it was really yours. I mean, to allow a guy to sell it is one thing, and not to say anything, but to sign on as a witness, no siree. And therefore, you lost your schus to be ma'arer. Now, a similar case would be where the field that this person is being ma'arer on was being used as a boundary, a meitzar, in another cell. So in other words, this person let's give the people name. Okay, so Reuven is claiming that Shimon had stolen a field from him. Now Shimon is selling another of his fields to Levi. And he uses this field that is supposedly stolen. He uses that as a marker to one of the sides. He says, I am selling Mr. Levy a field, not the same field that we're arguing about here, mind you. I am selling him a field which is bounded by the following four properties. And one of the four sides on the northern side It's bounded by the field, the very field which Reuven is claiming belongs to him. And Shimon is selling to Levi a different field, using that field, which he claims to be my field on the north side. And Reuven signs on that contract as if he admits that, yes, that field on the north is Shimon's field. But now he's saying, no, Shimon stole it. So why did you sign on a contract that called that field Shimon's field, Mr. Reuven, if you claim that it's really Reuven's field? You should have said, outrageous. How can he use my field and call it his field and use it as a marker for the boundary of a third field that I'm not arguing about? But I would never have signed on a field on a contract like that. Why, it's outrageous. But you did sign. So how do you explain the fact that you let that go by? I mean, over there, you didn't gain anything out of it, did you? You just basically were agreeing. So in that case, yes, it's true that Ebed Zechuto. Because what are you going to say? That I signed it for what? For what possible reason? What did you gain out of the fact that the other person is going to be selling a field utilizing your name? Okay, so let us see. Over here, we're saying that if you signed onto a contract of a field that you claim is yours and somebody else was selling to a third party, that that's it, and that you have lost your rights. According to Admon, you can claim that Hasheni Noachmi. I'm not buying. What we're talking about over here is where the Ma'arer signed as a witness, because a witness has to understand the case that he's signing on. He can't sign on a blank piece of paper or on a contract that he never read. So therefore, he certainly can't say, I don't know, I just saw it. They say, ask me to sign a contract. I think I don't understand what the guy, I didn't bother reading it. You can't obviously say that. But if he was a judge and he was a member of a Beis Din that gave an Ishur to this shtar, that is meaningless, because a judge does not have to know what a contract contains in order to write a henpek on the shtar, because the only thing that the Beis Din is saying is the signature of the witnesses on this shtar is an accurate signature, and this is a correct certified signature. That's all they have to write. They couldn't care less what's in the shtar. So if he were signed on that type of court document, it wouldn't prove a darn thing. The Tani Rebbe Chia, Ein ha'edim chotumim al ha'shtar alim kinkira'u. Witnesses obviously cannot sign on a shtar unless they read it, because they are witnessing as to the contents of the shtar. Aval ha'dayanim are only saying that we have established that this is the signature of the witness, so they can sign on that, af al pi shelo kira'u, and therefore don't make the mistake of thinking that if you had anything to do with it. That's not the point. It's only if you're an aid. Now, the second part says, but in the event that it was used as a meitzar with another person's name on the field that you claim to be your own and you signed on that, then for sure you give up your schus. Now, look, this is only true if the sale was to a third party. Like we said, Reuven is claiming a field that Shimon claims as his own. Reuven is saying it's not Shimon. Shimon then goes ahead and sells an adjacent field to Levi. Levi is a third party. And then in that case, if Reuven signs onto a contract that utilizes the name of Shimon as the owner of the field on the northern side of the field that is currently being sold, that there he's got no excuse for having signed onto that deed. He should have walked out of there outraged, right? But instead he signs like, yeah, sure, it's his field. So there, Enoch Inami, he loses his chus. But suppose Shimon is selling the adjacent field to Reuven, and he writes in the shtar to Reuven, Shimon figures, oh, what an opportunity. Reuven wants to buy my field, does he? Well, let's see if he signs on this contract. So he writes in the contract, yes, I am selling Reuven the field of which the northern boundary is my field, the very one that Reuven has been claiming for years is his field. Well, here's my big moment. If he wants this field, let's see if he signs the deed of sale. And in that case, if Reuven signs the deed of sale, Reuven can say, well, what was I supposed to do? I wanted the next door field. And I know darn well that if I had said anything, and I would have said, you can't call that your field, you bum. You know darn well that that's also my field. He'll say, you don't like the deed of sale? Mr. Levy has been asking me for this for a long time. I think I'll sell it to Mr. Levy instead. Why don't you go drop dead? So I couldn't do that because I was very anxious to get the adjoining field so that when I succeed in getting my field out of his filthy Gazlonim hands, that then I'll have both fields. So I just kept quiet, biting my tongue until I was able to establish ownership on this other field. So he can't say that to me. So therefore, says Abaye, that in the event that he actually goes and he sells it to Reuven himself, who is the Ma'ar heir, La'atzmo, lo yibed et zchuto. Because there he has a very good explanation of why he didn't say anything. He says, the lo avdi le'yachav hadn't bit my tongue, lo havi mazben li'ne'alo. He never would have sold it to me. Now, I mean, so what are you tiny against me? That in that event, wouldn't it have been smarter for me to go and give a moda'ah to the witnesses, call the witnesses together before they go in there to sign and say, listen, gentlemen, even though in this bill of sale that I am currently about to sign on and you're going to confirm, I just want you to know, I'm only signing it because I have to bite my tongue. But really, the way that he described this field is outrageous. He's claiming that the field to its north is his, it's mine, but I have no choice, right? So that's called a moser moda'ah. So he's moser moda'ah. So why wasn't I moser moda'ah? So ma'id lach lemimar, that if it really had belonged to you, so ibay lelemim ser moda'ah. So you're going to say, okay, so why didn't I say anything to the witnesses? I'll tell you why I didn't say anything to the witnesses. Because you can't trust anybody. That's why. Because basically, even if I tell the witnesses this and I say, don't tell anybody, you know, yeah, so he tells his wife, you know, and his wife is playing bridge that afternoon and she tells another, anyway, he'll get back to him within a half an hour and that'll be the end of the deal. I ain't telling anybody. So chavra, chavra, islay, bechavra, the chavra, chavra, islay. This is a general klal, which Gavi will write down afterwards, not while he's driving, I'm assuming. And the idea over there is that in many cases we use this yesod, that the word gets around. And therefore, I have a right to say, I didn't want to be moser moda'ah. It's a very important yesod when it comes to the issue of chazok on karkaot, that we say that the things are going to get around. Anyway, there was a case where Ahuda sa'ah simen la'acher, ir'er v'shachib. So there was an amazing case like this. A guy was being ma'arer on a particular field, and he signed on, exactly like we find over here, he signed on to a sale that had used it as a meitzar, in the case of the Mishnah, Mamish, and he ir'er v'shachiv. And before he died, he was ma'arer and said, listen, that field is really mine. Okay, so he was making an apotropos before he died, and he told the apotropos, you fight it out for me, and you save my yorshim. Anyway, so the apotropos comes to Abaye, and he says, listen, we have an irur against this field. The person I represent, who is deceased, he has a clear-cut chazaka on that field, and it's his. So he goes to Abaye. So Abaye says to him, look, I'm sorry, but you can't press this claim. Why? Because he signed before he died. He signed on a different contract that the owner of the field is now pressing in court and saying, well, look at this. This person signed on as a witness to a different sale, which utilized this field that he's claiming is his own, utilized it as a marker for another sale. And in the name of this person who he claims is a gazlan and stole the field from him, so why did he sign on it? And we learned in the Mishnah, so I'm afraid that your poor yatomim are going to lose the case. There's nothing I can do for you. So the apotropos said, now wait a minute. Remember that the halacha is that when you are dealing with cases of a deceased, was left behind Yatomim, The apotropos has a right to press any taina that the dead father could have said, because we don't know, right? So, I mean, we have to assume that we look out for the Yatomim's best interest. Now, I'm an apotropos. I have to look out for the Yatomim's best interest. So, let me tell you something. Suppose the father, before he died, suppose the father had said, well, of course I signed on to that contract because the last 3 inches, well, it's maybe a foot, it's really one talent. So the last foot of that field that was used as the marker, I admit, belonged to him. I was only arguing about the 99.9% of the field that is within the marker. So, I mean, I couldn't disagree with the fact that it's a proper mitzvah. Yes, he does own 1 foot of land along that border. So, okay. So what do you say to that? So that means that he signed on properly. Doesn't prove a darn thing. I say that's what happened. You don't know. I don't have to know. I'm an apotropos, and I am pressing the case in any way that I possibly can. And I know that he could have said that, and you would have had no defense against it. So Abaya said, wow, you're a genius. That's really true. Shaprika Amit, because indeed Rabbi Yochanan said about the Mishnah that if the guy would have said that, yes, there was one furrow in the field, and that did belong to him, and that's why I went along with the marker, so then he would be believed. Okay, so Abaya said, okay, genius. You get to keep the field, but that last little foot you have to give to this guy, right? Because, I mean, you're admitting that it's his. So anyway, zil havli miyat telemechat. So at least give him that foot. It belongs to him. Anyway, that foot happened to have on it a very valuable row of palm trees. Woo! So havli lo rif, but the dikla now, the apotropos was not at all happy with the fact that he was going to have to take that away from his yatomim. So he goes back to Abaya and he says, listen, you know, if daddy was alive, since the court has already, this is the way the Ravid understands it, and some of the other Rishonim, I think it's the most easy to hear pshat, it's talking about where, because of the chazaka that the father had had on the field earlier, the court had already taken it and given it to the Yatomim. And now this person who had claimed to have bought it, he was the one who sued with the proof of this guy's signature on the sale that he had made of the other field that was adjacent to it, right? And it called it his own. So what happens is, therefore, is that Abaya's court was trying to take it from the Yatomim. Fine. So if that's the case, the apotropos says to Abaya, well, now wait a minute. What if the father of the Yatomim were alive? Could he not have said, yes, it's true. However, this extra foot of land, when I saw that it's between these two fields, I went back and bought it. I bought it from him. And therefore, you want to take it away from the Yatomim? You have to prove that that's not true, because I went ahead and I took it from him. Says Abaya, man, are you a super genius? That's also true. You could say that, because the Rabbi Yochanan, in the event that he says that chazarti v'lakachti v'menu, he would be ne'eman, because even though I can't prove it, since I have originally a chazaka on the entire field, right? And I mean, that was why we were giving it to the Yatomim. Then I came along and admitted that I sold him this piece, this 1 foot, and that's why I signed. So now if I come back and say, but then I bought it from him, and I still have that original chazaka, I mean, it's a pesha asra, a pesha itra. I say I sold it to him, and I say I bought it from him. So now I can explain away the fact that I agreed that the last piece had belonged to him, and therefore he had used it as a mitzar, and I also now have a right to keep that part too. And says Abaya, man, oh man, let me tell you guys, I'm on the Mukim Apotropa. If a guy wants to die, and appoint an administrator, he better find a guy like this. This guy is amazing. So you want an apotropos that's going to the yode la fuki beskuta the yasme, somebody who's got it in him to look at every possible tzad that he can be mahapech for the schus of the heirs. Beautiful. Okay, so that was number four. Now, getting on to number five of Admon. Coming up, number five. Admon number five. Who is going to support us for Admon number five? Is it Akiva? It is. Is it Richie? It better be, because Doc's right on top of him in my screen.
Zog de Helika Mishnah.
Completely different octave. Listen, what might be happening is that going on 168, Richie is starting to sing Who Wants to Live Forever? And that may be why he's just getting worn out. But all right, Richie, we want you to keep going here. And we're now getting on to number five of Admon, everybody. Who's excited by number five of Admon? This is an amazing case. Number five of Admon, ready to go. Akiva gives us two thumbs up. Well, at least I got from somebody two thumbs up. And here is number five. Doc looks singularly bored this morning instead of giving us even one thumb up for Admon. Come on, man. Make it something for Admon. Man, this is after we just had a challenge to Admon's opinion. I mean, you know, at least vote for the underdog here. So, Misha Lachle Medinatayam, we've been talking about cases of people who disappear overseas. Okay. This guy didn't disappear, but he was away for a long time. And he comes back and he says, oh, heck, Richie didn't mute himself. That's not what he said. He says, you know what? I used to have a way to get to my field, but I've been away so long, my access route has become overgrown. I have no idea where it was, and I don't know what to do because my current field is surrounded by land that is owned by other people. And nobody remembers precisely where. It's almost as bad as trying to remember what the entrance to the old city looked like. I mean, it's impossible to remember. I have no idea. Where was Rehov Yafo? Where was... I have no idea. Anyway, somehow or other, everything has disappeared. Nobody can figure out where was my land. So Admon says, well, I mean, look, he's definitely got an access route, right? So what he needs to do is take the very least damaging access route. So whichever one is the shortest one that takes away the least land from a landowner, that's the one that he can take. The Chachomim Omrim? The Chachomim say, absolutely not. He can either pay $1 million for an access route or he can use a helicopter. But there's absolutely no way that he can force anybody to give him an access. So Yikne lo derech b'mei amana, o yifrach ba'avir. Says the Gemara, what do you mean? We know that he had an access route. I don't understand. How can he not force the person to give him back at least the smallest amount of access route? My time in the Rabbanu. Shaper Komar Admon. Admon is absolutely right. I mean, if the owner is claiming you don't have a right to anything, we know that he did have a right to something. He answers the Gemara, you don't understand. It's not talking about that one person owns the area all around his field that is surrounded by this one person's field. There you'd be right. But we're talking about four different people. Each side of his current field is covered by a property that's owned by somebody else. Now, he doesn't remember where the path was. So how can he sue to get a path from anybody? Each one says, what's your business with me? You never had a path with me. Can you prove it? No. Why don't you go to the next guy? And so this guy just keeps going around in a circle. So if it was owned by four different people, then obviously he can't take from anybody. Ah, come on, says Gemara, that doesn't make any sense. So then how could Admon, I mean, Admon's not crazy. How could he possibly sue for the smallest available path? Doesn't make sense. My time at Admon. On my Rava, let me explain to you, okay? In the case that we would have four people who themselves are not the original owner, each one who was originally the owner, sold the property to somebody else, right? Fine. Or for that matter, we now have four people who own the four adjacent fields on four sides, and each one of them had bought one field from one original owner. Of course, everybody agrees, including Admon, there is no way for you to recapture that lost path, because every single one, of course, is going to push you off and say, what are you coming to me for? What makes you think it was in my property? Go to the next guy. That's not the case in the Mishnah. What we are talking about is where one person owns the land. So why can't you go? How could the Chachamim argue? Because this one person bought his one piece of property as four separate parcels from four separate people who owned it originally. And therefore, Admon says, look, the bottom line is that this person can now sue that single individual, and he could say, Mikol makom daka itli gabach. Look, somewhere in the piece of property that originally consisted of four parcels, somewhere in there, I own a path, okay? And therefore, you have to provide it to me, because I can definitely prove that in that piece that you bought, I have an access route. And therefore, you have to give it to me. Now, of course, I cannot prove that I have a particular access path. You give me whichever access path is most convenient for you, and I'll have to accept it. Whereas the Rabbanan say that what the owner can taina is, listen here, buddy, let me make a deal with you, okay? I'm a reasonable guy. So if you want to take the reasonable deal that I'm going to offer you, I'm going to offer you a deal. So I'll give you an access path for half the price of the normal property. If you shut up, fine. But if you don't, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to cancel the sale. Give everybody back the shtar to the original owner. And then what are you going to do? If I give it back to the original owner, so then you're not going to be able to sue anybody. And you'll never get a path. So if you start making problems for me, then you're going to have to pay for something. Okay, so I'll compromise with you, right? Now, the question is this actually true? Most Rishonim hold that the pshat over here is not that he can really return the contracts and start over again. I mean, you're going to need a new sale and so on. So even if you give it to the original people, why would that put everything back to the way it was? They understand, most of the Rishonim, they understand that the idea is that it's not a threat. It's a description of the rights that he has to the din, the theoretical rights. And what he's saying is, look, I got whatever zechuyot were in the hands of the previous four owners. You understand? When I bought this field from each one of those owners, I bought the right to his piece of property on your north side without any possibility of anybody coming along and demanding an access route. Okay? So I keep that right because that's the right that I bought. The same thing is true when I went to the southern side and so on and so forth. So basically, since theoretically, if this were still in the hands of those four people, there'd be absolutely nothing you could do. And they could either demand whatever it is that they want or make you buy a helicopter to get into your field, and there'd be nothing you could do about it. The purchase includes all of the rights, all of the legal rights that those people had to deflect any claim against their property. So the fact that it happens to be the same guy that owns these four fields, well, so it's the same guy. But the same guy basically is the one who has their rights. Therefore, it makes no difference. This is the way the Nemuke Yosef explains it, and many of the other Rishonim as well. So now, there is, here I'm pulling a Barnea's neighborhood deal. Okay. So the Baal HaNesiva is, which because it's Barnea's neighborhood, is my great great grandfather from Tzfat, of course, the Loberbaums. So which Gavi could go and visit right across from the beautiful shul. So the Nesivas HaMishpat Tainas that Only somebody crazy would think that this is true. Well, what do you understand? How can the Muki Yosef possibly mean something? He says, I'll tell you, his Lashon. His Lashon is, it would have to be, let me get the exact Lashon. All right, I don't waste your time. But he says, lo yachalok bezekim hamitakesh v'ohev aval. Only the most obtuse and lover of messed up thinking would possibly believe such a crazy thing. And what's the trap? Because the person is considered to have a legal right to deflect any taina because the person didn't know. Why is that? That's just a sophic. If the bottom line is that there exists a shibud on the karkaot, so the shibud remains. It's still there. It's just that it wasn't able to be utilized. How in the world would it disappear just because you can't press claims against a particular owner? You have to be nuts to believe that. Anyway, so he tells that the point over here is not that the person claims that he owned the path. The person claims that he had an easement, not an ownership. So an easement is merely an agreement that you have the rights to pass through. Now, that does not give you a shibu to the karka. That is only a shibu to aguf on the individual. That we have an agreement that it's an easement. You can't press an easement by saying that, well, you definitely own the property against which there was an easement. I lost the kayach of being able to be kind of my easement. That's all. And it's not a shibu against the karka. That's what Madrina Shtar Lamarayu. Anyway, so as you can see, there are many, many levels of how to understand what precisely the cases are in this Taina that Admon is, that the Rabbanon are saying against Admon. Now, there was a case where a guy says before he dies to his Yorshim that I am giving one palm tree to a particular daughter. Remember that palm trees were extremely valuable and you could basically make a living off of a palm tree. So he gives a palm tree, but he didn't say which palm tree, and he may have had hundreds of palm trees. Anyway, when he dies, the Yitomim, the Yorshim, all the Yorshim, of course, are male. So they went ahead and they split it up and they didn't give the daughter anything. So she went and sued and she goes to Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef figured, okay, basically that's the same as our Mishnah. In the Mishnah, if different people own it, so each one can say, wasn't here. So each one of the boys says, oh my gosh, your palm tree. Well, I mean, it isn't here in my Rishus. Why didn't you speak to Jerry? And Jerry says, why didn't you speak to Albert? And meanwhile, this girl keeps going round and round in circles. Well, what can you do, right? Oh, my Abaya, what? It's not the same. You're right. That over there, everybody can say that, look, it wasn't in my chelek, but over here, we know for a fact that all of the Yarshim originally, when it was owned by the father, over there, she had one of those trees. It's not as if she had the tree against one of them. She had against all of them the right to the tree, in which case they're all mechuyev to give her, to see to it that she gets her tree. So how can anybody claim it's none of my business? It most certainly is. So what is there to do? They are stealing in aggregate her palm tree. The only thing to do is to completely redivide. So they're going to have to first give her a decal and then split it up if they can't agree. I mean, obviously they could agree between them. You know, one guy will give the decal and they'll pay him. But the point is that she does have a right to sue and to mess up their entire plan. And in another case, a guy said Dikla Levrat, and he dies, and he leaves a bunch of palm trees, but interestingly enough, he also leaves two half palm trees. Now, how do you leave two half palm trees? Very simple. He's got an additional two trees in which he is a partner with somebody else in the tree. So it means he owns two half palm trees. So now the question is, obviously the heirs would like to get rid of any kind of partnerships and simply keep the palms that are entirely the father's, split those palms. So now the question is, when he says, I'm giving a palm tree to my daughter, do two half palm trees equal one palm tree? A fascinating question. Confucius say. But anyway, this is the issue over here. So that's the question. Mi koru inish le tre palge dikla, dikla olo. Would a person refer to two half palms as a palm? Omale Rav Mordechai Leravashi, I can tell you that Avimi Mehangrunia quotes a psak of Rova that in fact koru inish le tre palge dikla, dikla. That is indeed the way that people could refer to it. And the Yesomim have a right to give the two half palms to the daughter who will now have to reckon with these vicious additional owners. Now she's got two other people to contend with every time she wants to get anything. Well, that's her problem. Anyway, that concludes Admon's fifth Psak Halacha. Rabbi Gamliel did not support him in this one either. And we've got two to go.